May it please the court, I'm Adam Foster, number 35969, here with Mark Giuliani for the appellants. And this case begins with the people's right to amend the state constitution. Article 2, Section 1 states that all political power is vested in and derived from the people. All government of right originates from the people and is founded upon their will only. The McKee v. Louisville case clarifies that the power of referendum is a fundamental right, and the upshot is that the people's right to amend the state constitution trumps any conflicting local ordinance or state statute. With that in mind, please turn to the plain language of Amendment 20, which in fact clarifies that there is a civil right to use medical marijuana in addition to the exemption and affirmative defense from criminal prosecution. So that's really true. In many of the cases, the provisions are discussed all at once, which makes sense. But if one looks at the summary exhibit, it's clear that Section 4 really does deal with lawful use and sets these limits of 2 ounces of medical marijuana or 6 or fewer plants, and states that use within those limits is lawful. So that's the civil right that's created by Section 4, which is separate from the affirmative defense and exemption from prosecution in Section 2.
Why is that separate, counsel? Why can those be read in conjunction, and that this limits or defines more precisely the extent of the affirmative defense to criminal prosecution?
Your Honor, I think it's that language is lawful, and that was what Judge Gabriel focused on in the Boehner dissent. And then when one turns to, and I actually don't think it's necessary to turn to the Blue Book, because I think that language right there, is lawful, clarifies the people's intent in passing the amendment. But when one turns to the Blue Book, and Judge Gabriel goes into this at length, it said, in effect, that the intent of the statute was to legalize the medical use of marijuana, to make it lawful. And the people obviously voted for the amendment, implicitly rejecting the arguments against, adopting the arguments for, and in the arguments for section and the ballot title, it said over and over again, lawful, legalize, and that was the intent of the people when they passed the provision.
If Mr. Foster, though, it seems to me this is all beside the point. Your client is not claiming a right to use marijuana. Your client is claiming a right to distribute marijuana. Where do you get that?
That is true, Your Honor. And that comes in the, that does come in the exception to criminal prosecution in Section 2D, which talks about the sale, distribution, dispensing. And it's worth noting that actually those three words and manufacture are all in addition to the definition of medical use in Section 1. So within, or I beg your pardon, for patients who have a registry identification card, and it's undisputed that the two patients who were named as individual plaintiffs here did have registry identification cards and thus fall under the Section 2D exemption. That also then covers the manufacture, sale, distribution, dispensing.
All right, so they have an exemption from criminal prosecution, but this case does not involve a criminal prosecution.
Well, and Your Honor, it kind of did, though, because in the zoning violation notice, it explicitly cited a misdemeanor provision, and in effect, the county, by issuing the zoning violation notice, said that they could fine Mr. Giuliani, I believe it was $100 a day, and throw him in jail were he to violate the county zoning law, and so that's why the Footprints facility had to shut down. But Your Honor, I also would suggest that if it's an exemption from criminal law and they can't prosecute an individual for doing it, then in effect it is lawful. And again, that's bolstered by Section 4. Also, the fact that it talks about sale, distribution, dispensing, that's in addition to manufacture. So manufacture, if one looks at the definitions under the Pharmacy Act or under the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, manufacture would include growing the medical marijuana.
Mr. Foster, assuming that there is a right to, under Amendment 20, to have a medical marijuana dispensary, what is the impact of the 2010 legislation on your argument?
Well, that's a great question, Your Honor. So pre House Bill 1284, there was, and this is during the time period at issue in this case, and it's clear from the Clinton and holding it at 215 of that holding, but there was a Department of Health definition of primary caregiver, and the Department of Health at that time, and this is between August of 2009 and when House Bill 1284 went into effect in July of 2010, stated that providing medical marijuana in and of itself would qualify someone as a primary caregiver. What happened when HB 1284 came into effect is it created this brand new statutory category of a medical marijuana center. So it creates the center, it limits the number of patients that one can act as a caregiver for. That limitation on the number of patients that one can act as a caregiver for is not in Amendment 20. It was a new creation in House Bill 1284, and that's because the legislature wanted to make this distinction between a center versus a primary caregiver. So what would happen is if this court adopts our position and the Footprints facility is allowed to reopen, then Mr. Giuliani would have to qualify as a center and undergo all of the background requirements and meet all of the requirements that the Department of Revenue has since put in place.
Well, let me just follow up with that, because one of the other things that happened as a result of 1284 being enacted is that Jefferson County enacted a ban on medical marijuana dispensaries in unincorporated Jefferson County. So if we were to rule that there was a constitutional right under Amendment 20, then wouldn't the Jefferson County action prohibit you from operating?
It would not, Your Honor. And the reason for that is that we would fall under 38.1.101, which states, notwithstanding any other provision of law. And so what that means is that if the state legislature wanted to basically exempt the ban from 38.1.101, they would have needed to explicitly state that in House Bill 1284. So because the Footprint Center was open before House Bill 1284, they would get to remain open. They would, in effect, be grandfathered in under 38.1.101. Now, the county's ban as to new medical marijuana centers is not an issue in this case, but arguably would be okay. And the county could say, well, we're not going to take any new applications for medical marijuana centers, but Footprints specifically, and I believe it's the only one in the county, would be grandfathered in.
Counsel, I want to understand precisely the nature of the constitutional right you're claiming. As I understand it, it's not merely a right to distribute, but given the procedural background here and the factual background, it seems to me it's a right to distribute from a particular location that you're claiming a constitutional right to, or perhaps you're saying that by virtue of the constitutional right, you cannot be prohibited from distributing anywhere. You are constitutionally entitled to distribute anywhere in the state. Is that what you're saying?
No, sir. What we're saying is that there must be some place, at least pre-House Bill 1284 in Jefferson County, where one could distribute. And that's the ZJ Gifts case and then also the City of Denver advertising case, that there must be, if it's a lawful activity, some place in the county where it's prohibited.
All right, but so if that's the case, then here, assuming we were to find in your favor on the existence of this right, that wouldn't mean you prevail necessarily. We have to go back to the zoning ordinance and see whether the county acted properly pursuant to its zoning ordinance. And if it did so, then you still do not prevail. Is that correct?
You know, that would be correct if there was any evidence in the record that the county had allowed any location for a medical marijuana dispensary. There was no evidence that the county has ever presented that the Footprints location was ill-suited for a dispensary, that there was any kind of criminal behavior going on that fell outside of Amendment 20. In fact, the county commissioners all acknowledged, in effect, that it was a model medical marijuana dispensary. The decision was based on their idea that if they never allowed a dispensary in an ODP, then despite the fact that the people of the state had deemed this important enough to amend the state constitution, that you could just never do that. And so when the state constitution was amended, that must take precedent over the county zoning ordinance.
Well, I guess I'm still trying to get a handle on exactly what kind of declaration you would want. Mm-hmm. It seems to me you want a declaration that Foothills can operate, or Footprint, excuse me, can operate where it was operating. You don't want a declaration that they must be allowed to operate somewhere within Jefferson County. Those are two different things. But your argument seems to be, as long as they provide somewhere in Jefferson County, that's enough.
That's true, Your Honor, and that's because if you look at the zone that the facility is located in, as well as the official development plan, you can have virtually any type of use in this location, including analogous uses for a medical supplies distribution facility or a pharmacy. But the uses are virtually unlimited, this broad, including but not limited to language. And so again, if it was a more restrictive zoning classification that, for instance, did not allow a retail establishment, was only residential, you know, then perhaps there would be a different result. But what we're saying is, you know, for goodness sakes, if it's allowed anywhere in the county, this is an appropriate location. And if, in fact, there's no evidence in the record that indicates otherwise, that it was a problem location or that it was ill-suited for that type of use.
But does a court really have the authority, if the right is only to operate somewhere within the county, does a court then have the power to order the county where that will be? Or isn't that left to the political process in the county?
The court does have the power, Your Honor, and I would argue, in fact, that the court must do that under 38.1.101. Now, what the county could then do at that point is say, okay, well, we have these ODPs that were in effect from the 1990s. We now need to amend them and to change the county zoning regulations and define those specific locations within the county where the use is permitted. And that certainly would be lawful, but under 38.1.101, it's just like in the Jam restaurant case. If you have the use existing and it's lawful, you're grandfathered in. Future applicants, probably a different result.
But that assumes that the use was lawful under the OPD. I'm not talking about lawful in general under Amendment 20. Your argument assumes that it's lawful under the OPD, and therefore the court could order it to be allowed to operate in that location. And I guess what I'm questioning is that assumption. If it's the mere fact, let's assume it's not lawful under the OPD. The court might have authority to say you must allow them to operate somewhere. But I'm just troubled by this idea that that a court can tell the county, even though it's not lawful under your zoning regulations, you must allow this business to operate there.
Well, but Your Honor, again, it's 38.1.101, and in 2000, the county
grandfather's lawful uses. Okay, if it's not consistent with the OPD, it's not a lawful use in that area.
I respectfully disagree with that. I think the state constitutional amendment has got to trump the zoning authority. And when one examines the record, what the county is saying is, we don't like this use because it's illegal under federal law, and so we're going to determine that it's not legal anywhere in the county. But the county zoning administrator is not charged with enforcing federal law, and in fact, the folks who are charged with that, the federal law enforcement agencies, have not been prohibiting medical marijuana centers in the state. The legislature has legalized it through HB 1284 and it implemented this entire system. The Department of Revenue is collecting the money, and the federal agencies that actually are charged with enforcing that law have said, as long as you're operating within the state law, that the federal agencies will not treat that as a offense worthy of prosecution.
Okay, Mr. I have to follow up. You're still off the point here. The point is where. I mean, you're arguing that you're entitled to operate in a particular location, and you keep saying, well, the Constitution trumps. So it sounds to me like you really are saying the Constitution gives me a right to operate wherever I want, regardless of any zoning regulations.
Rather, what we are saying is that it's an appropriate location, not wherever they want, but where the Foothills facility is located, the lease is still in effect, and they would open up in the exact same location. And that the county cannot, as an end run around the state constitutional amendment, say, well, we're going to enforce federal law even though that's not our job, and put a blanket ban on the use everywhere in the county.
Foster, go ahead and answer Judge Tomlin's question. I know you wanted to save some time for rebuttal. We're going to give you 2 minutes for rebuttal, so go ahead and take this question.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. to go back to what you were saying a few minutes ago about 38.1.101, does the success of that argument based depend on your prevailing on your 106 argument?
It does not, Your Honor. I would argue it depends on prevailing on the constitutional argument. I think that if we prevail under the 106 argument, that it's just a run-of-the-mill 106 case, and that in fact we actually probably would have to prevail on the constitutional argument.
If you don't prevail on the 106 argument, doesn't that lead to the conclusion that the use of the medical marijuana dispensary in under the ODP in that particular location was not lawful under the ODP?
Your Honor, again, I don't think so, because I truly don't believe that it was a zoning determination. When you look at Mr. Chadwick's testimony in the record, it's all based on his interpretation of the state constitutional provision and federal law. Again, there's no particularized findings about the location at all. So if that were the case, then I'd say, yes, it's a Rule 106 issue. But I truly don't view the case as a Rule 106 issue so much as the county saying that because of their view of federal law, they're not going to authorize the use anywhere in the county.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Bailiff, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal when we're done here.
May it please the court. My name is Eric Butler, attorney registration number 29997. I represent the Jefferson County parties. The central issue in this case is whether the Colorado Constitution requires local jurisdictions like Jefferson County to allow the sale of medical marijuana within their boundaries. And it's on that issue that I do intend to focus today. I do, though, want to address Judge Tomlin's question about the medical marijuana code that was passed in 2010. The parties didn't brief that because of the way this case got here. Before we filed our motion for summary judgment, the court had already decided the 106 argument and decided that there was no right under zoning to operate a medical marijuana dispensary at this location. For that reason, our arguments, which were in both a counterclaim and an affirmative defense, that our ban in 2010 would also prohibit it, were moot, and they were never argued below and subsequently never argued at this level. I will, however, say, since you asked other counsel about it, that we do believe that regardless of the zoning, that ban in 2010 would now apply to footprints. 38.1.101 aside, the reason is 38.1.101 is a restriction on changing zoning regulations. If somebody moves in and does something that's permissible under the current zoning, you can't then change the zoning and say you're out of here. But the power that was given to local jurisdictions in the medical marijuana code is not a zoning power, it's a general police power separate from the statutory zoning power. So I would say we do still have that argument if it comes to it. But again, we never argued that because of the 106 decision.
Well, let me just follow up. Are you saying that this argument is properly brought to bear in this case, or are you saying that if we were to provide relief in this case, that your colleagues, your opponents here, would meet these arguments on remand?
Yes, I'm saying the latter. I'm saying that if the court said, hey, there is a constitutional right that trumps the zoning that was in place, remand for further action, we would then raise the argument that, hey, we have a 2010 ban in place now, that stops them.
And it would be up to the trial courts in the first instance to decide the extent to which the constitutional right relates to the statute, et cetera, et cetera.
That's my understanding of procedurally how that should work. So I want to talk quickly about what rights Amendment 20 itself provides. And there are really three of them, all found in subsection 2. There's an affirmative defense against state criminal liability for the medical use of marijuana. There's also an exception to state criminal liability if you have a registry ID card from the state. And then there's an exception as well for physicians who recommend the medical use of marijuana. That's really it, other than some protection of plants for people who fall in those areas. Now, you've heard that the appellants really focus on subsection 2D and argue that they have an implied right to distribute. Subsection 2D does in fact mention sale, distribution, and dispensing, but it's really meant as a limitation on those three rights that are given earlier in subsection 2. This is clear, really, if you look at the format and the way Amendment 20 is structured. Subsection 2D starts with the language, notwithstanding the foregoing provisions. In other words, notwithstanding the fact that we've given these three rights, here are some limitations. And that's all it is a limitation. This is clear from the definition of medical use, which is very specifically laid out in Amendment 20 itself and includes acquisition, possession, production, use, or transportation. It does not include dispensing, distribution, or sale. And it's very peculiar that the drafters would not include that language, which is in the limitation in 2D, in the use if they intended to protect it. There was no subsequent enactment or amendment to the amendment. It was all done at once, and that definition is very limiting.
Although that observation seems to be cuts two ways, because of course, why put it in the limitation on the affirmative defense if it's not actually then necessarily part of the use that's protected?
And all I can do is speculate on that, but what I would say is they were intending a very broad limitation that said all these things that are currently illegal, use, distribution, you still can't do those things if it's not for medical use.
But Mr. Butler, are you saying that under Amendment 20 there is no provision or authority whatsoever for distribution or sale of medical marijuana?
I am. I'm saying that all there is an exception from criminal liability. And that's exactly what the Boehner division of this court held.
Well, doesn't that lead to the conclusion that Judge Loeb reached in the Clendenin case in his special concurrence that Amendment 20 then has a gap?
It does indeed, and the legislature hurried to fill that gap when it passed the medical marijuana code.
Well, if that's the case, and to come back to what your initial comment was, then don't we have to look at the arguments of both sides here in light of the 2010 amendments?
I would say, given the procedural posture, only to the extent that that casts light on the intent or the intent of Amendment 20 itself. If you can look at how the legislature framed the medical marijuana code, that may be a clue about what they thought the intent of Amendment 20.
Well, but how can the legislature in 2010 divine the intent of the people of the state of Colorado in 2000 when Amendment 20 was adopted?
I believe that there's a rule of construction, although to be clear, we didn't cite it in our brief, but I believe there's a rule of construction that says if there is a legislative scheme which is authorized by the Amendment 20, which is exactly what happened here, that happens where that legislation is passed shortly afterward.
It's not really shortly after, though.
It is a distinct gap, but we have to remember, and I think we all saw it in the news, that Amendment 20 really didn't become news until 2008 or so.
And then what, Mr. Butler, is the effect, in your view, of Section 8 of Amendment 20, which says that the General Assembly can implement its provisions by legislation?
And I think that's where you get back to, because there was a specific grant to the General Assembly to implement this, it's important to look at what the General Assembly thought this meant. And I think it would be better for the court to do that.
Well, if we were to do that, then wouldn't that lead to the conclusion that even under your interpretation that the General Assembly can divine the will of the people when when the people adopted Amendment 20, that therefore the people intended that there would be medical marijuana centers in order to dispense and sell medical marijuana?
I think the answer to that is no, because the General Assembly was very clear in that enactment, House Bill 1284, that it was creating a right to distribution and that it was something that every local jurisdiction could opt out of. They gave us a specific right to opt out under that same statute that created the medical marijuana centers and created them. They didn't exist prior to that.
Well, then what does that tell us about the in either the intent of the people or the intent of the General Assembly? Does it mean that there was an intent that there could be medical marijuana centers in certain parts of the state as long as the people or local authorities decided to approve them?
As long as the local authorities decided to approve it, yes. But I think that the General Assembly was doing two things in House Bill 1284. It was implementing Amendment 20, but it was also creating something new. It was recognizing the gap that Judge Loeb saw in the Clendenin case, that Amendment 20 didn't provide a way for users to get access to medical marijuana, and that something new needed to be created, and that's what they did. But they recognized that it wasn't a constitutional right when they allowed local governments to opt out, and left it to localities to decide what to do. And as you've seen, different locations have done different things.
Marijuana equivalent of dry counties, essentially.
Sure. Yeah. I think there are a lot of similarities with alcohol, although there are certainly distinctions. So I want to talk a little bit about the zoning violation itself, too, because we do have an exception to criminal liability found in Amendment 20. The zoning violation, though, didn't claim or threaten criminal liability. It's true that there is one method of enforcing zoning that allows criminal prosecution, but if you look at the record and look at the zoning violation notice, what it threatens is the civil fines and only the civil fines. There was never a threat of criminal prosecution in this case. If you found that subsection 2D, that there's some ambiguity about whether distribution was ever intended, I think the first place that the court would look would be the Blue Book. That's because this was a voter-approved amendment, and we need to see what was the intent of the voters at the time. What were they thinking when they passed this? And the Blue Book has two statements in it that say distribution is going to remain unlawful. The response you see in the briefs from the appellants is, well, those are in the arguments against section, and Amendment 20 was passed, so they don't carry any weight. The voters must have disregarded them or thought those statements weren't true. I think there are two problems with that argument. The first is that one of those statements actually isn't in the arguments against section. It's in the general background section, and it says distribution of marijuana will still be illegal in Colorado. Now, it's true that there's a more specific statement that is found in the arguments against section that says it will still be illegal to sell marijuana to another individual, including a patient, on the state registry. That is in the arguments against section, but the fact that Amendment 20 passed doesn't mean the voters thought that wasn't true. It just means the voters thought Amendment 20 was worthwhile, even though that was the case. And in fact, it's just as likely that many of those voters only voted in favor of Amendment 20 because it was limited in scope and because they didn't see it as suddenly opening up legalization of distribution of marijuana.
Also, I've got to say, normally when we're asked to determine legislative intent, we're looking at the actions of a number of legislators, and it seems to me a bit of a fiction to divine the intent of the group as a whole, and now we're being asked to divine the intent of the electorate as a whole, consisting of millions of people. Is there any other place that we can look that might lend itself to a little more concrete analysis, something that's not quite so nebulous where we're, frankly, guessing at what the intent was?
Yes, although I wouldn't cast such doubt on the Blue Book, I think it is useful to look at. But I think one other place to look, again, we didn't brief this, but the actual ballot title itself, when they go into that booth, and what it says would be useful to look at. That's for those who didn't read the Blue Book before they voted, that's what they're going to see. This case isn't about the validity of Amendment 20. It's not. The county respects what was passed in the year 2000 and the rights that are actually there. But what the appellants are trying to do is to stretch Amendment 20 to create a new right, a right to operate a marijuana dispensary. That's simply not the intent of Amendment 20. For that reason, we'd ask that this court affirm the decision of the trial court.
Also, I have one last question. Putting aside for the moment the effect of House Bill 1284 and Jeffco's adoption of a resolution saying that there will be no medical marijuana dispensaries in unincorporated Jefferson County, putting that aside, if we were to hold that there is a constitutional right to distribute, could we nevertheless also find, though, that there just simply isn't a right to do so where the plaintiffs want to do it because of the zoning, because this is a Rule 106 proceeding?
Absolutely. And, you know, I should mention, I disagree with the characterization of what the Board of Adjustment did. I think the record contains its decision. Its decision was not based on concerns about the constitutional amendment. It was based on a construction of what the Dutch Creek Center ODP allows and doesn't allow. And if the Dutch Creek Center ODP doesn't allow medical marijuana dispensaries, it doesn't allow them. And I think it is conceivable that the court could say, if it found that there is such a right, constitutional right to operate a dispensary, it's got to be somewhere, but county, you don't have to do it here. But we do not believe that there is any such right to distribute in the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, I'd invite the court to consider if there was an amendment to the state constitution legalizing something less controversial than medical marijuana, if it was salsa dancing, for instance, and if the county said, because the ODP does not authorize salsa dancing anywhere in the county, despite the fact that the voters specifically amended the constitution to allow it, we're going to hold that you can't salsa dance anywhere in the county. I think that's in effect what they're doing, because when one looks at the uses in that shopping center, there's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, there was a place that sells items on eBay, uses that didn't exist in 1992, but the county finds an analogous use except for medical marijuana. So I really do think that it turns on that specific issue. The Judge Loeb gap that he notes in the amendment, I think, is a bit of a red herring. I think that it's true that in the first instance, someone had to get a seed for a marijuana plant or a clone for a marijuana plant. But then after that first person got that first plant, at that point you can manufacture it, which includes growing it, distribute it, dispense it, sell it, do all of the other things enumerated under the amendment. Now, with regard to the ballot title, the ballot title said, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution authorizing the medical use of marijuana and providing an affirmative defense. Two things, not just providing an affirmative defense, authorizing the medical use of marijuana and providing an affirmative defense. And when one looks at Section 4 then, that's why Section 4 is necessary. Otherwise, the 6-plant limit and the 2-ounce limit could have simply been placed in Section 2D when it talks about the exceptions to criminal prosecution. The fact that the people approve this separate section is extremely significant. With that, I would ask this court to hold that the Footprints facility can reopen in its current location. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our argument in this case. The case will be deemed submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Thanks both sides for their excellent arguments. Very helpful.